Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the conference call. Our chairperson today is Kent. Kent, please begin your call, and I'll be standing by for the question and answer session. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. I would like to welcome all of you to IRC Limited, stock code 1029, 2021 annual results conference call. With us today, we have our CEO, Mr. Yuri Makarov, our deputy CEO, Mr. Danina Cordillaro, and our CFO and company secretary, Mr. Johnny Yun, here. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. A brief Q&A section, which you can ask in English, Mandarin, and Cantonese, will follow the formal presentation. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. Announcement and PowerPoint slides we'll be using for this call have been uploaded to our website, www.ilcgroup.com.hk. 欢迎大家出席提供2020年的年度业绩电话会议。今日我们公司出席的代表包括我们的首席执行官马家瑜先生和副总裁高丹先生，以及我们的首席财务官及公司秘书袁兆章先生。今日出席的嘉宾暂时会预设为聆听模式。 管理层报告完毕之后，我们会有答问环节，欢迎大家用英文、国语或者普通话或者广东话发问。另外提醒大家，今次会议正在进行录音，如果会议使用的公共演讲稿已经上载咗我哋个网站 www.ilcgroup.com.hk， 欢迎大家下载嘅。我而家有请我哋嘅首席执行官马家瑜先生同我哋主持呢个会议。 Oh, it's now my pleasure to turn the call over to our CEO, Mr. Makarov. Mr. Makarov, you may start now.
Thank you, Kent, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We are very pleased to declare the figures of 2021, and the most important is the underlying profit, which is reflected on our presentation on page number 5. It reached 125 million, which is 5 times more than it was last year. More about financial figures, more information about financial figures will give you Johnny Yuan, my colleague. I can add to this information that during the period we produced and sold approximately the same amount of material. Our mining and blasting contractors, they are performing a little better than it was last year, but still we are suffering from some underperformance of them. We are still limited with some railroad limitation, and we believe that this situation will be improved quite soon, but still, because of the COVID restrictions and because of some geopolitical situation, railroad transportation to the east of our country is not very well right now. We have done quite a lot of time to debottleneck this area. We have studied seaborne transportation, but we believe that the seismic change of situation will be after the commissioning of the newly built Amur Bridge, which is only 300 kilometers from our mine. We are performing quite good in the construction of Sutara, which has a bit higher grades of concentrate of ore. And we believe that by the end of 2022 or early 2023, we will start operations at this mine. Once again, the progress on the construction site is quite good. I think that's it about operations, and I will be happy to answer questions. Meanwhile, Johnny, please guide us through the financial figures.
Sure. Thank you, Yura. if you can turn to page 9 of our presentation slides, that summarizes the financial results overview. Top line, let's look at our production number first. We produced around 2.6 million tons of iron ore, which is down by 7% when comparing with last year. Now, we are being hampered by the mining contractors' issues as well as poor ore quality problems. But all of these are short-term issues which we are handling, we are dealing with. And so we produced 2.6 million tons, and we sold 2.6 million tons in 2021. So essentially, whatever we produce, we sold. And moving down the line, iron ore price was exceptionally exciting. It went up on average by around 53%, and so that helped our profit and loss account tremendously. Our achieved selling price is $159 per ton on a dry mixed tons basis, and that gives us a net revenue of $371 million. Cash costs also higher because of the fact that we are diverting more of our sales to seaborne customers. Now, as you all know, when selling to seaborne customers, there's a longer transportation route, i.e. more expensive transportation costs. So that's why our cash costs goes up. But also, we would like to highlight that those seaborne customers offer a better pricing terms than the railway customers. So moving down the lines, we've got a very healthy growth in EBITDA. Our underlying gain is $135 million, which, as Yura has mentioned. So, yeah, these are all key numbers. But if you can turn to page 10, that is essentially a very brief summary of our P&L. I'll quickly go through the numbers. Gross revenue is $382 million, up by 62%. Hedging loss, $11 million. Now, obviously, with this very strong iron ore price last year, it's inevitable that we made some hedging losses. But it's also important to note that the hedging is for risk management purposes. This is not for speculative purposes. So taking into account the effect of the hedging, our net revenue is $371 million, which is 65% higher than last year. Cost is also higher. As I mentioned, because of the transportation costs as well as the higher mining costs, general mean and then other income, you know, these are all normal items. And then we end up with an EBITDA of $171 million. Again, that is a very healthy growth when comparing with last year of $79 million. Moving down the line, the one line I want to highlight is the financial cost. It dropped by 28%. That is resulting from a combination of factors, mostly because of the fact that we repaid $91 million of our loan due to Gazprom Bank. Because last year was a very good year, so we have surplus cash, and so we believe that it's worthwhile to pay off the debt to reduce the gearing as well as to reduce the interest cost. And also, we have a lower financial cost. And at the end, we have an underlying gains of $125 million. This is an exceptionally good number. If you look at our market cap today, it's somewhere around $180 million. So that is essentially around 2/3 of our market cap. There are some non-operating or non-recurring items as usual. The most noticeable one is the gain on liquidation of current project. Now, for those of you who don't remember, we had this current project in operation until 2015, when the iron ore price was so low that we have decided to put it under care and maintenance. And subsequently, the project was in liquidation in order to save costs. Now, the liquidation process has completed this year, or 2021, and so we can remove Kernak from our financial statements. And by doing that, we can write back some of those provision for coaster costs or other payables. And so we record a non-cash gain of $12 million. And then moving down the lines, we don't have any reversal impairments. When compared to last year, we have a $76 million reversal impairment. But all in all, we are reporting a profit of $134 million. Again, this is an exceptionally good number. Let's quickly move down to the balance sheet, which is shown on slide 11. Basically, I think there are only two things that we need to look at. A, net asset increased by around 130 million. That is essentially our profit for this year. And the other line, which is very interesting, is the net debt being shown at the bottom part of the slide. Now, this number is very low. It's now at 60.5 million US. That is the effect of us early repaying the loan as well as our strong cash flow generated during 2021. Talking about cash flow, let's quickly look at our cash flow statement in slide 12. I mean, top line says it all. I mean, we've got 166 million less cash generated from operations. As I mentioned earlier, we have utilized our cash mostly to reduce our debt. So we repaid the loan by 91 million, and we also took the opportunity to pay off some guarantee fees due to Petros of 14 million. We spent some money on CapEx because we need to develop Sutara, and as you had mentioned, the development of Sutara is on track and it's going well. So we spent around 13 million on CapEx, mostly on Sutara. All in all, we have generated cash of around 32 million for this year, and taking into account the opening balance of 20 million, we closed the year with 52 million US. Slide 13 is the debt profile. As I mentioned a couple of times, the right part of the slide shows our early repayment of the loan of 91 billion. And another interesting part I want to highlight is that if you look at the green bar at the right-hand side of the chart, it's showing that we need to repay 20 million each year as a loan repayment. Now, that is not a significant amount. I mean, that shows that it will be quite easy for us to service the debt, allowing us to develop an Sutara or pay some dividends. So I think from a debt profile perspective, we are looking quite good. So that concludes my session. Again, happy to take any questions you might have in the Q&A sections. But for the time being, let me hand the call back to Yura, who will talk about the sanctions as well as our advantages. Yura, please.
Sure. Thanks, Johnny. Quick review of our advantages is reflected on the page 17, and they are the same, but still I would like to describe them. We are still producing under the COVID restrictions. Actually, they have not affected us materially. We are improving our financial and operational figures. At least we are trying to do it. The prices of iron ore helps us to reduce our loan, as Johnny mentioned a couple of minutes ago. We are producing a high-quality product, which is priced by the 65% Platts price index. Russian currency quite weak, and it helps us as an importer, as an exporter of the production of what we are producing. Our loan is connected to the LIBOR, which helps us to decrease the financial costs. And the most effective, as I mentioned in the first part of my presentation, the logistics, which was quite effective always, but last year it was affected by the limitations like COVID and some others. But we believe that all this will be in past after the commissioning of the Amur Bridge, which is under construction, and hopefully quite soon it will be commissioned. Talking about the sanctions, which are quite important right now, we are not materially affected with the sanctions. We are operating quite good. Some of our counterparties were affected, but that was not affected us anyhow, and we are operating without any restrictions. I think that's it from me and my colleagues, and we can go straight to Q&A.
Operator, I can start Q&A.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now go for questions. If you'd like to register for a question, please press star one on your telephone. Thank you. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have any questions, please press star one on your telephone. Thank you. 各位有提问的请按星一登记，谢谢。And first question comes from Mr. Yi-Pan Liu. Please go ahead. Thank you.
Hi. Thanks for the results. It's a quite good result. I have a couple of questions that I would like to clarify. The first one is on the sanctions. Can you help to clarify why does the sanctions have no impact on IRC? And in particular, given you are receiving US dollars as your revenue, does this have an impact on any future dividend payment, whether in Hong Kong dollars or in US dollars?
I can probably start answering. This is Yuri Makarov. I can answer, start answering about sanctions. The main reason that we have not been affected is that quite a lot of our customers, they are situated in China, and our main revenues come from the Chinese companies. China, at this period of this geopolitical turbulence, China is not affected by any sanctions. Hope it will be the case in future, that China will not be affected. So that's quite favorable for us. There were some banks in Russia where we have accounts, but we were not using them, so we simply close these accounts in these banks like VTB, and we are not dealing with them. Another good reason that we are not affected is that a couple of months ago, our main loan provider bank called GPB, it has transferred its loan to a company called MIC, and because of that, these sanctions also not affecting us as well. Hope I have answered your question about sanctions, and if yes, then I would like Johnny to answer the second part of the question.
Sure. For dividends, because if we are to pay dividends, it will be paid by IRC, being a Hong Kong company. Our shares are obviously denominated in Hong Kong dollars, so we'll just pay the Hong Kong dollar as a dividend in case we are by the time we can pay it. So I don't see any issues with paying dividends for the time being.
Thanks. And just to clarify that question a bit further, you are saying that your Chinese customers have no issue in paying you in US dollars despite the sanctions, and that is it also your intention to pay out dividends for in the future for long-suffering shareholders?
Johnny?
Yeah.
Can you guide us through the answer?
Yes. We have no problems receiving US dollars. I think, Danilo, perhaps you can also add more color on that, but let me also answer the question for dividend first. For dividend, Yes, indeed, the board is actively looking at paying out dividend. What we are going to do in the first half of this year is to conduct a capital reduction exercise. To make it simple, what that means is that we made some losses in the past years. We have to offset those losses with our share capital, after which that will allow us to pay dividends. Now, this exercise will be done in the first half of the year, paving the way for us to pay dividends. So the quick answer to your question is, yes, indeed, the board is looking at rewarding the shareholders with dividends. And talking about sanctions, cash settlement, I think Danila will be in the best position to answer your question. Danila, please.
Yeah, Junior, I can add. In terms of sanctions, I guess the question was about transaction in US dollars. As obviously you are aware, the majority of sanctions were imposed by US, the European Union, and the entities and the companies and the banks who are directly mentioned in the sanctions of European Union or of UK and US, so these entities, they have issues in doing the transactions in GBP, in US dollars, and euro. We are not obviously in the list of sanctions of any of the countries which I mentioned. We are not or dealing with the customers, or we're not dealing with other parties who are directly mentioned in the list of the blocking sanctions of EU or US, which are preventing us of remitting them euro, US dollars, or GBP, or getting this amount. Or getting the amount in US dollars or euro, and on the basis of this, we are not experiencing any problems with this. And the banks we are using, you mentioned about the list of the banks who've been listed in the sanctions, which are preventing them to kind of do a transactions in euro, US dollars, and GBP. We are not working with those banks, particularly with the VTB. In any case, there are plenty of banks in Russia with whom we can do the transactions. And currently, as Juni mentioned, we're not experiencing any issues of getting the remittance in US dollars, which is the currency we are supplying our products to our customers in China. And because of this, as we mentioned already, there is no direct impact or not whatsoever.
Thank you. That's helpful. I have a few other questions, but I think I will let other people ask. If no other person asks, I can follow up.
Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have any questions, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Thank you. Our next question comes from Peter with Walkhaven Capital. Please go ahead, Peter. Thank you.
Good afternoon, gentlemen, and well done on some good results. Could you give us a bit more insight in what you think the cash costs are going to be for 2022? I guess rising fuel prices are going to be a negative, but a weak ruble will be a positive. They were up 40% last year, so perhaps you could give us a bit of color for this year.
You're right. Can I take that?
Sure, Johnny, please.
Yes, Peter, I think that's a very good spot. Indeed, our cash cost is going higher. But if you look at our announcement, we have a table setting out a breakdown of the cash cost, which is on page 6 of the announcement. Unfortunately, I can't give too much guidance about the cash, our current cash cost or forecasting cash cost. But if you look at our total cash cost and I'll explain to you what the variances are, perhaps that will be helpful for you to estimate or forecast what the cash cost will be. Now, if you look at page 6 of the announcement, setting out a breakdown of the cash cost, the most significant increase of the cash cost is for transportation customers. It went up by from $15 per ton to $24 per ton. Now, as I mentioned earlier, that is mostly because of our increasing sales to seaborne customers. While obviously, as I mentioned, you know, seaborne customers offer better price. On average, on a good day, the net contribution could be similar. But then, generally, we will still be preferring to sell to the railroad customers, especially via the Amur River Bridge, which will be in operation later this year. And so, if we shift our sales effort to more inland, obviously transportation costs will go down. That will significantly save our cash costs. Now, the other item is the mining extraction tax. Now, this is a government newly, you know, not exactly introduced, but they have changed the formula in calculating mineral extraction tax. So that gives us another $2 increase. And the other more significant item is the mining cost, which, as discussed with Vera, we are now working on Kim Kang West, and so we have to catch up with the prior mining volume lag, as well as the stripping ratio is higher, and so mining costs will be higher when we are mining at the Kim Kang West. But the good news is that Sutara is going to come online very soon. Once Sutara is fully up and operational, we anticipate that, you know, our mining costs will be slightly better because of the slower stripping ratio. But that will be at the time when Sutara will be coming to play. So hopefully I've given you some color on this.
That's very helpful. Thank you. And so one more question. You, I think you're running about 81% capacity last year. You've had some problems with your mining contractor. You inferred earlier that you expected these problems to ease. Can you give us a bit more detail about when you expect them to ease and what sort of levels of capacity utilization you see for this year?
Johnny, are you allowed to make these forecasts?
Not exactly. I think it's difficult to forecast the production capacity. But I think we can address the question by what measures we are taking to mitigate the mining contractor's issues.
Yes, that's what I was going to do. I was thinking simply clarifying whether it's allowed to do the forecast. Well, what we have done last year, we have implemented a new contractor, which helps us to increase the amounts of volume we are mining and blasting. And you can actually see it in the figures on the page number of our presentation, I think. And you see that amount of cubic meters we have moved are much bigger than it was last year. Unfortunately, we are still not satisfied with our contractors, and we are moving in two directions further. First of all, trying to persuade them to do more and trying to negotiate some agreements with another contractors. Although this is quite challenging in this situation, but still we are trying to do our best. Hope it helps
Thank
as well.
You.
Question. Hello.
Once again, Yep. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have any questions, please press star 1 on the telephone keypad. Thank you. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that is star 1 for questions. And we have a follow-up question from Mr. Yiping Liu. Please go ahead.
Thank you. My follow-up question is regarding your hedging program. Is your intention to continue with your hedging program in the future? And the other question was, in terms of discount to your main Chinese customers, how much of a discount is that to your to the normal 65% IOR?
Johnny, Danilo, maybe you can clarify our policy.
Let me talk about the hedging program. I think in the current situation, I think let's look at IOR first. It is indeed very difficult to do any effective hedging because the forward curve is always in backwardation, i.e. it's always forecasting that the iron ore price will go lower. And so it's very difficult to do any effective hedging. Now, by saying that, I'm not ruling out the possibility of hedging, but it's just that if you look at the way we hedge, we allow much, much caution in terms of entering into new hedging contracts. It seems that we are better off by not hedging too much. But again, can I just reiterate that when we see a very strong iron ore price and we believe that it's worthwhile to lock into that price for risk management purpose, then the board will still be believing that it is for the benefit of the company to hedge a certain amount. But that is the overall strategic hedging strategy, and obviously because of the movement in iron ore price as well as the movement in the quotes from the hedging, it's very difficult to guide you about, you know, how much hedging we're going to do or how much hedging we're not going to do. So, but the overall program is that. So hopefully I've answered your question. And in terms of your second question about discount, again, this is a commercial discussion, a commercial point, which I think is a bit sensitive to describe in this call. Because obviously we don't want to give too much commercial secret in this conference call. That will affect our business as naturally. But I guess if you look at our achieved selling price versus the pledged 65% price, you can have some idea of what the differences represent.
Johnny, I can...
Thanks.
I can only add that in terms of the shipments which we are doing on this sea route, we believe that we are trading on a level which is in line with the price in which other majors like producers who are located in Australia are getting. Although on the basis of of course, looking at the difference which Johnny mentioned a minute ago between the price we are realizing and between the index, it seems that the difference is more. The difference is more than. Our peers are getting who are trading at the port, but the trick is that when we are trading on the basis of the shipments over railway, we are not bearing any costs in relation with the sea freight and also the cost of the reloading at the port. At the end of the day, the profitability which we are getting all the supplies using the railways is better, but there is a certain situation in terms of the marketing in the northeast of China and in the area where the major producers of the steel are located in in the area with the ports, it's different. It's different, and this difference it reflects the situation on the market, which we have to adhere to, because we are with our volumes we are not influencing the price on the market, and we are the takers of the price. But in our view, the client mix, the geography mix which we have at the moment, it's basically the best balance in terms of the de-risking our risks of logistics, our risk of marketing, and making decisions in which direction we are sending our products. We have to take into account other factors, including the congestions on the railways and the capacity of the border crossing. And at the end of the day, it has to be the balance of the quantity we are producing and the sales we are achieving, and the kind of the margins and the realized price of realized price and the cost. Unfortunately, we cannot give you the exact information because, as Johnny mentioned, this is commercial.
Thanks, I appreciate your answer. And to follow up on the railway, does it mean that due to the sanctions, it will be very difficult in the future to potentially sell any iron ore to Korean or Japanese customers rather than 100% to Chinese customers?
Can I clarify the question? What is the connection between the Japan and Korea with railroad?
Right, because you said before you actually use the railroad to sell to seaborne to Chinese customers further away, right, than the main Chinese customers that you have now. So I'm wondering, why have you not previously tried to sell to Korean or Japanese customers, which are of the same distance, if they are also essentially by seaborne customers? Is there some historical fact, or do you think that, you know, in the future you will still sell 100% to Chinese customers?
We actually have sold some material to Korean company called, forget the name, Tony, can you remind me of Danila? What is our Korean client, big steel mill, POSCO, right?
Yes, POSCO.
We sold to POSCO. We have done some shipments to Japan, but they were not very big. No, we don't see any restrictions with the selling through the delivery over the sea. We don't know what sanctions will be, what kind of sanctions will be imposed in future, but currently our logistics is not affected with the sanctions at all. Railroad is operational, sea freight is going on, so right now there is no any effect. What will be in future, let's simply wait.
Thank you.
Thank you. And next we have a follow-up question from Peter with Walthaven Capital. Please go ahead, Peter.
Yes, gentlemen. You're forecasting a complete deleveraging over the next 5 years. And what I'm trying to get a sense of is you're generating, hopefully conservatively, something around $100 million a year, even allowing for a well-deserved dividend of $30 to $50 million a shareholder, that's still going to leave a reasonable amount of free cash flow. What would be your priority for that money? Do you expect to bring a reasonable degree of leverage back into the business? And what is the approximate cost to increase the capacity to, I think, from towards the step one is to 4.6 million metric tons per annum.
As I understand, it's a question about dividends once again, right?
Yes. Well,
partly, but also the cash in excess of any dividend paid, what are your capital budgeting priorities? Do you really expect to run the business with zero leverage? And can you give us some idea of what the cost to increase capacity to 4.6 million tons per annum would be?
Yes, perhaps let me try to explain this. I think that's a very good question. I mean, you have done your calculations, and indeed we are looking at some positive cash flows this year because of a very strong iron ore price. The current iron ore price is quite strong, and we have some ruble depreciation as well. I think generally we are looking at three areas which we are trying to focus our cash resources on. The first is Sutara development, because that is crucial for us. Otherwise, there won't be enough feedstock to allow the project to go on. And Sutara is one, and then reducing the gearing, i.e. repaying the debt, is the other one, because obviously, you know, even though our obligation to repay is only $21 million next year, but it's always nice to reduce the gearing. Now, as a side answer to a question you asked, whether you know we should be geared or totally ungeared at all. Now, I think this is a very interesting question, because from the history of IRC, we have never been ungeared before. But if you ask me, so obviously this is a board question, and the board will need to look at you know the cost of funding as well as the cost of equity or things like that. So there will be a combination of factors that we need to consider. But if you ask me, generally, I think it's perhaps justifiable to have a slightly geared company. But again, I think it's just too early to tell, because we still have around $100 million of loans that we need to repay. So, to recap, Sutara development, B, reduced gearing, and three, very importantly, dividends. The other thing is the board is very, very eager to reward the shareholders with dividend. It has been long overdue, and we are actually meeting the promises that we made when we first listed in Hong Kong. And so, but again, at this moment, I can't guide you about the level of payout. That, I guess, the thing is, we also have to look at how the year 2022 goes in the second quarter, or as well as the third quarter. But I can assure you that the board is very eager to pay dividend, and that's why we are very, very much accelerating the capital reduction program to allow us to pay dividend.
Thank you. And my last part of my question, the cost of increasing capacity.
Yes. Yura, let me
this
try
is slide, to answer. Slide 26 of your deck.
Yes, Johnny, please.
Yes. I think this is an interim upgrading plan that we discussed a few years ago. I guess the thing is, we have to walk before we run. Now, by walking, what do I mean is that we have to get Sutara up and running first. Because without Sutara, we simply will not be having enough feedstock to support the increased production capacity. And so I guess the quick answer to the question is that 4.6 million ton production plan is not going to materialize in the near future, because we will be focusing on Sutara development first. And I guess by that time, we will definitely be looking at all possibilities of development.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have any questions, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Thank you. Thank you. There are no further questions at this point in time. Kent.
Thank you. 如果將來有什麼問題，隨時可以跟我們聯絡，聯絡方法可以參閱我們的 IRC 官網
www.ilcgroup.com for Australia. Due to the time limitation, we are now ending the meeting here, and thank everyone for joining us today. And we appreciate your time. If anyone has any questions, please feel free to contact us at any time on our website or contact information, www.ilcgroup.com.hk. With that, thank you and have a great day. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.